Welcome back to the Sega Guys podcast, Sega fans, where we are the new Sega and the old Sega too. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, and here's the Irumajiri to my Phil Spencer. It's James the Sega-holic. Mate, how you doing?
I'm very well, mate. I'm tired, but here. I think we both look a bit crusty this morning recording this, but no, we're ready to go. We've got a good topic. The intro has alluded to it. Can't wait to get into it, mate. How's yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. We're just come back to the end of half term, the last weekend before half term at the time of recording this. And yeah, it's early in the morning on a Saturday. You know, that Limmy gif that we like to share, or your own one. Yes, mate. Ready to get into it. Been enjoying a few games, got a few videos in the pipeline, but yeah, this one was definitely a topic that that surfaced. It's been going on for quite a while, actually. I've been noticing this trend on social media, particularly on Twitter or X. Yeah, I think it's probably a good discussion point because it touches a little bit on the history of Sega and the history of Xbox. And that is the thoughts that that Sega are the new Xbox. And yeah, I don't know if you've seen this, as many of these proclamations that Xbox is the new Sega as I have, but I do see it a lot on Twitter.
Yeah, it's the Xbox is the new Sega, as opposed to the other way around. That's the one. You see the most. It's early in the morning, mate. It's fine. But yeah, it seems to be something that you're seeing more and more. And there's always these kind of comparisons, you know, and I think they're very, very high level. There's always seems to be this link with the two companies. And it, like, you know, even going back to Microsoft with the whole acquisition era, yeah. Whenever it was, they were in their kind of Goldberg phase, you know, you're next, you know. But it's something that continually comes up. People just making these off-the-cuff comments that because Xbox have gone third party, that they're the new Sega. And obviously you've got Phil Spencer's recent interview where he, you know, it was a podcast he was on, and he kind of declared that, you know, they're not getting out of hardware, they're not going to be the new Sega. And of course, that prompted me to put a bit of a post out, which certainly upped a few people, as I like to do. And, you know, it's just something that we thought we would talk about, because seeing Xbox or the new Sega based purely on the fact that Xbox have gone third party is pretty disingenuous. It's very, very high level. And it's also really, really ignorant about the plight that Sega went through. You know, it's if you want to kind of look at it from a total, kind of a very blunt, you know, bird's eye view, this one went third party, that one's went third party, but Xbox are still making hardware. Sega didn't make hardware anymore. There's a lot of variables at play. Two completely different companies. And I thought that, yeah, let's have a wee chat, mate. We agreed this one kind of late yesterday. So let's get into it, mate. I think it'll be a good discussion. We've got pretty passionate opinions about it anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, why are Xbox the new Sega? Why are people saying this? And as you said, mate, it's because Xbox have, for all intents and purposes now, come completely third party. You know, they come out and they said that there's no red lines, that every franchise is fair game. And I think we're seeing that now. Not only with Sea of Thieves, which was a rare game, although it's not, you know, your traditional tentpole Xbox franchise, but we've seen Forza Horizon 5 get announced for, I think, is it just PS5 at this stage?
At this stage, yeah.
Yeah. I imagine it will probably come to the Switch 2 when that gets announced. I don't think there's been any games announced for the Switch 2 yet, has there? We've just seen what looks like Mario Kart 9, but Microsoft have expressed that they do want to make games for the Switch 2, the Switch's successor. And you've got to imagine that Forza will come that way. And if it's Forza, you know, everyone back in console wars, mate, they just pollute social media and you can't get away from it, no matter how many accounts I mute. But I always used to see one of them was, all Xbox has is Halo, Gears and Forza. Halo, Gears, and Forza. What's new this year? Halo, Gears, and Forza. Well, that is the three pillars of Xbox gaming, and you see Forza Horizon coming to PS5, and that really underlines to me that there is no more red lines, and I think that's kind of what people have taken as confirmation that everything is coming multi-platform now.
I mean, I think whenever Gears Emergence Day, I think that one, whenever that gets it, that will go multi-platform as well, and I think that will be a real kind of line in the sand moment of seeing. Obviously, Gears has been on PC for God knows how long, and obviously all the Xbox kind of first party stuff has always gone on Game Pass for PC anyway, but when that goes to PS5, I think that will kind of send a real message that, as you say, there's no red line anymore. It's no case by case basis. I think it's just going to be everything will go, and that's the difference. It's like, in the line that I says to you on WhatsApp is, Sega went third party to survive. Xbox are going third party to expand. Xbox are going third party to, enforce and justify their tens, hundreds of millions, billions pounds or dollars worth of acquisitions, because Phil spent, Daddy Satya's money, and now Daddy wants a return on his investment. So that's what's happened. And it's a very, very different landscape to whenever Sega were hemorrhaging money, and basically had their debts forgiven when Okawa passed away. And Sega went third party basically to survive. There would be no Sega. They had to make that decision drastically. Even the mere decision to go third party still costs hundreds of millions. You know what I mean? For Sega to do, there was a massive outlay financially to cease production of Dreamcast, to get rid of inventory, to close down warehouses, to restructure. That cost Sega a lot of money to do that. So it's completely different. As I said, it's like the show, totally disingenuous to compare both getting into, third party at that level.
And I think we'll probably come back to that in a little bit, because I think that the industry as a whole is in a completely different place as well. I don't think Microsoft will be the only ones doing this, but we'll get onto that in a little bit. But I think the other thing that drives a lot of this conversation, beyond it just being Sega going for a party, is there's certain elements that the companies share, at a superficial level. Both of them have at times been terribly run. You look at some of the mixed messaging Xbox do, and you can kind of align that to the way that Sega, particularly Sega America, behaved. I mean, even the Series X and Series S, you can kind of trace that back. I think the Series X is a great console, by the way. I play mine more than anything else. I think it's a fantastic console. It hasn't got great software exclusive to it, so that's where the comparisons end. But the mismanagement, the mixed messaging, even the names don't click with people, and you've got to think, does this kind of mirror the 32X Saturn's kind of scenario? Two consoles, one entry level, one premium, and they just whatever, the marketing just isn't there, the messaging's just all over the place. So you do have kind of sort of similarities, as I say, really superficial. But then the two companies do share a bit of history, don't they? Sega were actually making games for Windows all the way back in what, 94, 95, with the Sega PC range. And then you had Microsoft with developing the Windows CE operating system for the Dreamcast, which, not the biggest fan of it, but mixed results there. But they did have their fingerprints on part of the Dreamcast's design. And then there's the link between the Dreamcast and the Xbox, and that the Xbox almost was, for all intents and purposes, a Dreamcast successor. I know a lot of people say it's the spiritual one, but as we've said before, mate, it very nearly played Dreamcast games, didn't it?
Yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, Ida Majiri was trying to go over the line, you know, and visited, you know, Microsoft several times to try and get that point across to make the Xbox backwards compatible with Dreamcast software, which obviously Microsoft rebuffed, you know, because they were going their own direction. But, you know, let's not forget that Microsoft sent teams from Redmond to study Dreamcast during its R&D. You know, Bernie Stolar's got the famous line, you know, they got to learn the business from us and walk away. You know, so Windows CE being on Dreamcast, the kind of seeds of that relationship, that was the kind of the foot in the door, you know, of the whole kind of console industry to speak. They were learning what to do. And I know people, some people again, when I was looking at the comments on that post, were getting a wee bit kind of irked at the some people replying saying, well, you know, Xbox is the excuse me, the Dreamcast 2. And look, I'm not going to shit on, like, we love Xbox and Xbox 360, right? It's like, but you know, the similarities are clearly there with the OG Xbox. You've got the four controller ports online out the box. The controller even has the two wee slots in the top, you know, for like memory cards and is it rumble packs went in there? What went in there?
I think it had. Did that have? Did the original?
Well,
Been playing mine. Been playing mine. I'm pretty sure
Rumble
it had.
built in.
Yeah, it
Aye.
had. I'm pretty sure it had Rumble built in, but it still had
So
the.
it's just.
It did feel like a repurposed Dreamcast pad, didn't it? Because
Why?
it's like.
What was the point? What was the point of them with the fucking hard drive in it? You know,
Yeah.
it's like. So why were you going to buy memory cards? But
The big circle logo in the middle always struck me
that's.
as we were meant to have a VMU slot there, but we didn't go with VMUs. So we just stuck a big logo there.
Aye, a big and mate, how big and the Duke? How big is that big plastic dome in the logo? It's ridiculous. You could have shrunk the controller down significantly by just removing that bit. It's mad. Aye, the Duke was. I like the Duke. I've got a soft spot for that controller. You could,
Oh, I love it.
you know what I mean? But aye, the comparisons are clearly there. You know, and you've got the software that came over Jet Set Radio, Panzer Dragoon, Shenmue. You know, you had a, you know, obviously Project Gotham. You know. MSR, you know, an all but name. So you had a lot of kind of key franchises from Dreamcast that came over. So, aye, the two consoles, the two companies do share that kind of initial history, you know. And as Peter Moore said to us, you know, way back a couple of years ago when we spoke to him, whenever he was at Sega, you know, Robbie Bach came to him and asked, you know, during the kind of the death throes of the Dreamcast, you know, how can we help? You know, so they clearly obviously wanted IP, they were struggling for IP, they wanted exclusives on their Xbox, and they've went to Peter Moore, that kind of relationship that they had, you know, and they got those that kind of wealth of Sega games, you know, Crazy Taxi as well, Crazy Taxi 3, tons of games that came over, like Gun Valkyrie as well, you know, stuff. There's plenty of games, loads of them that came over, but the Crown Jewel didn't, you know, Virtua Fighter stayed on a Japanese system that stayed on PS2, and which again Peter Moore alluded to the fact that that was possibly, you know, he didn't have an answer, you know, definitively, but he alluded to the fact that it may have been a Yu Suzuki decision, which I can kind of see because if you think back to where VF was at that time, you know, just coming off a Model 3, VF3 being huge, you know, it's still the crown jewel in the arcade in Japan. I still think that game, probably even more than Shenmue, would still have been Yu Suzuki's kind of baby. And I think if he did have any kind of clout, he would probably have, I think he's pushed to keep that on a Japanese system, which is why it went to PS2. So that kind of makes sense. But either the two companies, Xbox and Microsoft and Sega, they do have that those kind of origins of Xbox that are tied to Sega. But again, if you look at the way both companies have obviously went their separate paths down the industry as the industry itself has progressed, they're two very different animals, mate.
They are. I mean, the one thing that they do have, like in those early days, you've got Peter Moore. He feels like the constant thread between the two, and it was great having him on, you know, very early. And when we moved the podcast over to YouTube, having him as a video interview is fantastic. And him able to, you could really tell his passion for both, and the competitiveness against Sony in both of his guises, in both, you know, the Dreamcast and for Xbox. And yeah, it's interesting you say that. That Virtua Fighter probably would have been focused more towards the Japanese audience, so went PS2. And that's a good point, because Virtua Fighter historically hasn't been overly popular in the West. You look at the Sega Saturn, and Virtua Fighter selling 1-to-1 with the console, Virtua Fighter 2, the biggest selling game on the console, all over in Japan, basically carried the Saturn in the first couple of years. It meant that it's outsold the PS1. You look at the Dreamcast, which completely underperformed in Japan, and despite being a commercial failure worldwide, it actually did pretty well in the first year in America. And it really makes sense for this that kind of that feel to be in the original Xbox, because it has the Dreamcast, all the Western focused games, because they were the ones that were, the Dreamcast was more successful than the Saturn in the US. So it makes sense for those sort of games and that sort of Sega vibe, so to speak, to come over in that direction, rather than, Virtua Fighter, which was, because it Virtua Fighter probably wouldn't have sold very well at all, unfortunately, on Xbox, I don't think. And it already had, I suppose, Dead or Alive. As much as I wanted Virtua Fighter 4, you can kind of understand why it didn't come over.
I mean, I remember going into the big Virgin Mega Store as well. It was it 2 weeks before Xbox launched, and they had the demo pods. It's big. Used to be at the top of Buchanan Street in Glasgow, big giant Virgin Mega Store, like huge, like 4 floors, and just God, so much entertainment, amazing place. Never get anything like that again. Physical media, streaming, and all that shit's kind of taken over. But what a place that was. But they had, on the ground floor, a bunch of Xbox demo pods. And I remember like seeing Dead or Alive 3, and hearing that Aerosmith song. Is it Nine Lives? Nine Lives taking over. Fucking just outstanding, man. And it's just such a good tune. And that attract mode playing, just, and it did, it was eye catching. It was, oh wow, this was a step up again, so it did the job. But I still wish we had a VF on there. It would have been nice to see an Xbox Power Virtua Fighter, because even though the VF4 on PS2, it's a good port. But man, those jaggies, they are like, doing there's a video I'm working on just now, kind of around VF4, and I was capturing, footage of every Virtua Fighter game, and well, up to four. And even whenever I was running like footage of Virtua Fighter 3 for the Dreamcast beside VF4 on PS2, even though you can see that the models have obviously been upgraded, and the animations are, it's a step up because it's Naomi 2. Support of Naomi too, but it was the Dreamcast version of VF3. It still had that beautiful smoothness, and that almost made it look better than VF4. And again, I'm running them side by side, and I'm going, there's no way Dreamcast couldn't have done this. Absolutely no way Dreamcast couldn't have done this. So, but I that would have been nice to see an Xbox powered VF, because I think there was compromises made to cut down the Naomi 2 onto PS2, whereas I think Xbox, with its extra kind of power, would have easily ported, a Naomi 2 game, probably 1-to-1.
Yeah, was there any Naomi 2 games that did come to Xbox? Monkey Ball was Naomi 1, wasn't it? I'm trying to think if there was any Naomi 2 games that came over. I can't think of any. I think most of them were Chihiro games that were the
Aye,
big
well,
ones that came over.
House of the Dead 3, that was Chihiro as well.
Yeah, so it was obviously OutRun. Virtua Cop 3 obviously didn't come over. Yeah, it'd have been interesting. But yeah, from what I've seen, Xbox could have easily done it and probably would have been nigh on arcade perfect. So it's a shame, but as I say, probably didn't sell as well. But yeah, the Xbox did feel like more a successor to the Dreamcast, I think, than the Saturn, which, as you and me have said many times, mate, the Dreamcast is an interesting one because it tried to distance itself from Sega's identity at the time. So it's probably the least Sega console compared to the nascent and probably least Xboxy Xbox,
It's
because
like
what came off was quite different.
Sega were kind of trying to shed their old identity to try and, make a new future for themselves, and Xbox are going, well, we'll just take your identity and try and use it for ourselves, even though it's like, well.
It's like the wolf trying to put on grandma's pajamas in Red Riding Hood, isn't
Well, that's an analogy, mate. That's.
it? So you can kind of understand why people might draw that link. But as you say, mate, it's disingenuous. And I think, in terms of context, and if there is anyone from Xbox that's watching this and doesn't really know the history, the trajectories of both companies are massively different. Sega were always a games company, all the way back to amusement arcades originally. They've met making the mechanical games all the way back in like the 60s. It was always around amusements and then arcade games. As the decades worn on, we had the whole 60th anniversary of Sega a few years back, so they've been at this for a long time, and they only got into consoles, in the 80s, and it's interesting that they actually the funny thing about both them and Nintendo is that the whole industry was quite uncertain then. Quite funny that how that uncertainty then kind of mirrors what we're seeing now, because it just came out of the video game crash, so to speak, which wasn't really a video game crash. It was
Didn't
just
affect
the
us.
no,
Didn't affect us.
no,
Like, crash? What
yeah,
crash?
it was just moving away from kind of arcades and the consoles at the time to more PC focus, because when you look at the big drivers, obviously it was America only, really. But then the nascent technology was home computers. Everyone was moving to home computers because they're faster, more powerful, more versatile. People just saw more value in them. So Sega's first console, the SG-1000, was basically a two-pronged approach with the SC-3000, which was the personal computer version. Nintendo weren't, they weren't being mugs either, because the Famicom is obviously family computer. And while that didn't have a bespoke kind of hardware configuration that was PC focused, you could buy keyboard and all the other stuff to turn it into a computer. So, yeah, it's funny how they started out making hardware, which was, maybe consoles, maybe computer. And obviously, we know the NES exploded with popularity in the US. Sega followed with the Master System. And then Sega were in the console industry for 20 years, feeding off a lot of their kind of arcade experience, all of their content, homegrown, internal developers, internal teams that they've grown and nurtured over the decades, various different arcade teams, creating new internal teams with, some success, some not so much. When you look at the Sega of America Mega Drive games, I know Sega Lord X has been quite vocal about what he thinks about some of the American output that came onto the Mega Drive. I've got to agree, some of it just felt like it was lazy and rushed. And obviously we had the Saturn, and the Dreamcast, and obviously we've been over the Saturn ad nauseum, I think, mate, at this point. So I won't go too much into that. But obviously, I think what's not underlined a lot is that Sega's fortunes with the Saturn coincided with the down with a severe downturn in arcades. I think they were already on half life support, weren't they? And once they got into Model 3, the cost of creating a Model 3 arcade game was astronomical compared to everything else, but the return on it was quickly diminishing, which is why Sega found themselves in the position they were in with the Dreamcast, which was, this is our last roll of the dice. And I think even then there was conversations around possibly going third party, because I think there were some at the top that felt that Sega should have always stayed software. But everyone at Sega was so entrenched in the console, mindset, that they all wanted to put everything they had into the Dreamcast. At least that's my perception of it.
What you said about, the Saturn kind of coincide with that downturn in the arcades. Also, as you said, Model 3, really, really expensive. And that's obviously what led them down the kind of path of Naomi, you know, to make those home ports not only easier, but more affordable. And the cabinets were more affordable as well. It was a hardware closely tied to the console, which made sense, and it worked wonders for the Dreamcast. But as I said, that post I put out, you know, it talks about, you know, that Sega made games fueled by passion and creativity. You know, and I kind of got a wee bit angry and said, you know, Xbox was about money and vanity, upped by Sony's PS2 will put the PC in the living room line, right? Of course, a couple of people replied and went, yeah, that's right. The multi-million dollar company just made games out of passion and creativity. But yeah, no, nobody ever said that they didn't want to make money. They're a business, of course, they wanted to make money. But at Sega, everybody pulling together, they were just creative people. Like some of the most imaginative, creative people in the industry, who at a time of being novices were learning on the job as industry grew. So yeah, obviously the high hegens up above, as we call them, the big bosses, they wanted to make money. But you know, there was a real bubbling creativity below the surface that was pushing Sega forward. Now, obviously, Seamus Blackley and the team that made Xbox, they were gamers, right? Nobody's saying that team, the Xbox, the original Xbox, just feels like a games machine, even though it is pretty much just a PC shoved into a box, right? But it did manage to feel like a really, really powerful, you know, console. So no one's denying that, like, you know, Seamus and Jay Allard and they guys, they were passionate. They told a couple of porkies to get, you know, Bill Gates online making prototypes that booted up in like silly speed to try and, you know, because Gates obviously thought it was going to boot the speed of a PC, and you know, Seamus showed this prototype that boom, it was up in seconds, you know. But what got Bill Gates over the line, I think, and what kind of pushed him to really take it seriously was the fact that Sony had made that line that they're going to take the PC into the living room, and they felt threatened. Now, we've all spoke about Sony's FUD on here before, you know, fear, uncertainty, doubt. You know, Peter Moore called it that. Sony spun a lot of shit about PS2. Look, PS2 is an amazing machine. We've recently got ones as well. We've been playing with this memory card, loading games off the SD card. But let's not kind of sugarcoat or airbrush what happened. Like, Sony's talked a lot of shit. I mean, I recently found a video with the infamous, I found the source of PS2 can do Toy Story in real time. I found it. Remember, I sent you it. It was a developer like kind of showcase where Sony got all these developers together, fed them a lot of rubbish about what the Emotion Engine and what PS2 could do, and then shoved them all in front of a camera to give their thoughts. And it was all just complete nonsense. Like, I can't believe that Sony have put a supercomputer in the living room. It's like, and again, that gets back to it. That was the stuff that made Bill Gates sit up and go, no, Sony are a threat. They felt that the PC was being threatened. So they literally put a PC in the living room, literally by shoving it into a box and disguising it as a console. But, you know, nobody can deny that Seamus and the team, as I said, had a shitload of passion as gamers. You know, Seamus's history, you know, he was ridiculed for, was it, you know, Jurassic Park, was it Trespasser, you know, for the floaty arm mechanics for holding the weapon. So he had a point to prove when he came back in. That was his kind of, you know, Phoenix from the Ashes kind of thing, the Xbox. But aye, it's Sega, everybody working at all the teams, you know, your Yu Suzuki's, you know, Tetsuya Mizuguchi, all these guys, Yuji Naka, all these guys were all just so creative. Like, you know, we think about like how like content creators feel whenever they get ideas, right? And you need to jot it down. Like we sit in the bus or the train to work, or sitting in the office, or sitting in the toilet or something, and you get an idea for a video. I better put it in my notes app. I can't imagine like how these guys with their creativity must have felt. Their heads must have been bursting with ideas, you know. Whereas, so as I say, it was total creativity at the complete heart of what Sega were doing. Everything that they were doing on their consoles and in the arcades were driven by a fire of creativity and passion. Whereas, while the original Xbox, the team behind the idea for it, yes, they were gamers, the underlying message of why they forged ahead with it was because they felt PC was threatened.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And nothing underlines Sega more than the nascent Sega Saturn era for me, because, and we said it before, we need to port the biggest, like one of our biggest arcade games in Virtua Cop. We'll just give it to a bunch of new entry students who've just come in, straight from university. Here's your first project, Panzer Dragoon. Futsuzugi was what, he was 22, 23, he was like an intern or something. It's like, oh, hey, we just need some ideas. Oh, I've got an idea where you ride a dragon. Oh, great. Here's a team of 10 people, make your game. It's just like, where is that, today? And this probably applies to maybe not so much Nintendo, but every other company, whether you're EA, Sony, Microsoft, it all has to be greenlit by, it seems like a board level, it has to filter through because things cost so much. But Sega was such an agile and an imaginative and innovative company. You think of all the things that they pioneered, a lot of it didn't take off. I think you've got, at the time of recording, you've got your Game Gear video coming up, too much too soon. That is just Sega's motto, wasn't it? CD games, Mega CD was too expensive. The technology wasn't affordable for everyone at the time. 32X, multiple SKUs, great idea. Not well thought out or implemented well in practice. Obviously, say Microsoft did a better job of that down the line, but online gaming, they're doing it all the way back on the Mega Drive. Sega Channel was Game Pass before Game Pass was around. The Virtua Fighter, the innovations that brought. Sega were always pushing boundaries. Super scalers, you could just go on. We do. I don't think we've ever done the podcast, have we, mate? We've always talked about we need to do a discussion around Sega's greatest innovations, haven't we? And I know Dave covered it pretty well at PRGE, with the panel that he did, Sega Saturn Dave at PRGE, talking about the innovations that Sega brought. And Sega brought so much to the industry. Comparatively, look at what's happened in the last, not just with Xbox, but with all of them in the last 20 years, or just since Sega have been gone. What has been the big innovation, really? There's not been one, It's been incremental steps, improvements in online, and then most of it has been around content delivery, and not necessarily in a good way when we're talking about microtransactions and DLC. But you hit the nail on the head, mate. Microsoft got into this because they felt threatened. Sega were in this. Yeah, they were in it for the money. Of course they were. Their
Aye, they're a
business. Their
business. Aye.
business was making games, but it felt like, from the outside looking on, it looked like Sega's idea was, if we just make good fun games, people will come. And it was always about the games first as well, I think, because this is a company that's rooted in arcade history. So you've got, obviously, we know that that was just to a degree some of Sega's detriment, because games didn't have an awful lot of content, but they were big flashy games that draw players in. Sonic is that game, really. It's even though he's built for the home, it's an arcade. He's got arcade sensibilities. Pick up and play, single action button for the whole game, and you look at it and it's back in 1991, you see that and you're like, wow, I need to play this. So that was Sega. That was the way Sega operated. Whereas Microsoft, first of all, they got into it because of a corporate decision. We can't lose market share. We can't lose market share from the PC space to this console, so we'll expand into the living room. Well, how are we going to do that? Well, first of all, they did have some pedigree because they had Microsoft Flight Simulator that went back to the 80s. And they had a few other games that came around then, but not much more than Sony did when they came with the PS1. But
Hi.
and similar to Sony, they of course started making deals with and buying up publishers, developers to try and expand their portfolio, because, like, just like Sony, they had absolutely no history apart from a few titles. A bit more than Sony, because, as I say, they had Flight Simulator and stuff before then. So they weren't from a gaming background. Sega and Nintendo, and obviously many more companies, Atari, were all from a gaming background. You even look at stuff like the Intellivision, not necessarily from purely gaming background, but from a toys and kind of entertainment in that respect background. Whereas Microsoft and Sony are just big corporate electronic or technology entities. That's sort of, oh, here's an opportunity for growth and expansion. Let's go over here. So that's the reasons for why these consoles exist is fundamentally different, even from that perspective.
Aye, and I think their influence on the gaming industry over the last couple of decades is kind of sad that gaming, modern gaming, almost mirrors, Sony and Microsoft as companies. It is very corporate, it is very business led, and obviously the industry has grown, and I think it's my opinion, it's grown to its detriment. I think you talk about innovations, like all you're seeing is like games as a service, season passes, subscriptions. And you look at graphics don't impress me anymore. I think graphics have got to such a level now where they're good enough. And whenever I shake my head whenever I see like ray tracing and path tracing, like videos where people get excited about the reflection on a glass surface. Like, what difference does that make to how a game plays? Absolutely sweet FA. Like, I saw it as like, look how good that toilet looks. Like, it was a video, it was in a room, and it was like a window. It was also the porcelain toilet, and there was like a light coming across it. Look at how that porcelain looks, and look at the light coming in the window, and look at the tiles on the floor. Look how who gives a shit? Honestly, I'm sorry. It looks lovely. It makes it look more realistic. But what is gaming about now? Really. And that's a video I'd love to do, about modern gaming. But I think it might just be beyond the scope of the channel because it would go away for Sega completely. But Sega and Nintendo, they started out making things to entertain people, like Nintendo card games, Sega making arcades, then bringing that expertise into the home, expanding into, making games, just fun, simple games. It's like not everything has to be a 100-hour epic with side quests and open worlds. Like, it just, I think gaming has really forgotten what it's about. It's become too focused on a business now, and I think less on fun. Like, I just, again, whenever I got the Switch for the Wii one for Christmas, it was nice to, to see more of an old style game. She took it out the box, she put a cartridge in. Yeah, you had to sign up for your Nintendo account and stuff like that to set up a user and stuff, but there was no, tens of whatever, 10, 20, 30, 40 gig system updates and game updates and having to install games and all that kind of stuff to play them. You slap a game card in and play it. It was very old school in respect to Nintendo for trying to stay true to that kind of ethos. And yeah, they have got an online store and it's very, very basic compared to like PSN and Xbox Marketplace. It's really, really basic, but it does the job. You can access it from the web, buy games, they sync over to your account, you download them automatically onto your Switch. But just PS5 and the new Xboxes, like even Xbox One X, I still think that still felt, I honestly thought when Xbox One X came out that it felt like Phil was trying to go back to the old way. Like the announcement trailer for Xbox One X, I thought was phenomenal. Like, up the stage, there's no power greater than X, and Xbox has always been about power and, showing like Gears of War 5 running, 4K 60 and looking absolutely phenomenal. And you're like, was it 4K 30? Was it 1440p 60? Can't remember the exact, but it looked amazing anyway on the One X. And it felt that they were really still trying to go back to those OG Xbox kind of roots. And then they go with the Series S and X, and you're thinking, right, okay, that's cool. Two SKUs. I'm seeing 32X and Saturn comparisons here. They both use the same architecture. One's more powerful than the other. One's more premium than the other. I see where you're going with this. I get it. And then they start giving your games to other platforms. And then it's like, you look at both the PS5 and the Xboxes that are out just now, and they're just basically what was Xbox's original vision. A PC crammed into a box to sit under your TV. Like, even like, I still think PlayStation peaked with PS2. PS3 was a weird system. Like, I don't know, we're trying to force a Spider-Man franchise on people, so we'll use the Spider-Man font for the logo and slap it on the front. It's like, I just don't understand that. You want free Spider-Man trilogy Blu-rays with your PS3 just to try and make a link? Sign this form and we'll send you them out on Blu-ray. It's like, but to go back to the kind of crux of the point, you know, it's basically that, you know, Sega and Nintendo, primarily at their core, were about fun. And I think the way gaming is now, there's a distinct lack of fun, mate. The indie scene is where I think the closest tie to the past is, because it's people I think who are like us, that similar age bracket, grew up with the kind of golden era of fun, simple arcade games, and they're wanting to try and bring that back. You know, smaller budget, shorter games, easier controls, pick up and play. Aye,
Yeah.
there you go.
Well,
Rant over.
I think, you make a good point though, because that's kind of where people gravitate to, because they do just want fun. You know, not every game needs to be this 20-hour cinematic, game where you have to use every single button, all 10 buttons on your controller and your trackpad and both your analog sticks and the D-pad. I think that's why Nintendo have seen so much success with the Switch, because you pick it up, like you say, mate, you pick it up, you plug a game card in, and away you go. And Mario still only uses two, maybe sometimes three buttons. And I think that's why you see the growth in the mobile market, because I think, as I said in another podcast recently that we were discussing, a lot of mobile games are simple controls, because of the device itself. But it's simply move, tap. If you've got a traditional game, it's usually directions and a single or a couple of buttons, and that's in essence what games maybe should be. And I think that's why people are gravitating more towards that. And I think that might be why, because I don't think we can say that the industry isn't going through a phase of change. Because it was obviously in the Dreamcast era, moving away from the arcades. Arcades died. Arcade games kind of dried up. And you moved to your more kind of more multimedia boxes like the Xbox and PS2, GameCube. Didn't do too badly, but obviously came third place in that console race. And then obviously we got the Wii that was different and did something completely different after that. I think the transformation here is that we're seeing a lot of. We're not seeing any growth really in console sales. Obviously, Xbox is down in terms of console sales. PlayStation 5 isn't selling as quickly as PlayStation 4. We're selling for more money, but they're not seeing the growth there. And even though the Switch has been a runaway success, my prediction is that the Switch 2 won't sell as well. I think it will still sell well, but I don't think it will sell as well as the original Switch. And the reason I think is, probably going on a bit of a tangent here, but I think no one is going, you're not going to get a Steam Deck that outsells the Switch, and you're not going to get, an ASUS ROG Alloy that's going to outsell the Switch. And the new Xbox handheld that's been rumored, that's not going to outsell the Switch. But it's kind of death by a thousand cuts. And you look at, it's kind of where the Nintendo go from here, and I think that's probably going to apply to Microsoft and Sony as well. Nintendo are just going to be later, as they always are. But obviously, Microsoft has seen an opportunity to get more return on investment by going multi-platform. First, it was PC, and now it's with going multi-platform to other consoles. Because people, it's all about, monthly active users now rather than sales. PlayStation are going in the same direction. They've already expanded onto PS3, PC. They've already, their console sales are slowing down And you're seeing games on other platforms. You had Lego Horizon on the Switch. You've got MLB The Show on Xbox. You've got Marathon that's coming on Xbox as well. So they're already making inroads there because basically these games cost too much to produce and they need to make money, and console sales just aren't increasing at the rate that they need to. And I think the Switch 2 won't sell as well as the Switch 1. It will be, from my perspective, I can't see the value in it so much, given that I've got an original Switch to play a lot of Nintendo games. I've got a PC, and if I pick up a handheld that plays PC games, I'm able to play those on the move. A tangent on a tangent now. One thing I love about Xbox is I can start a game in the living room on the Series X, and I can come down here if someone needs the living room and play out, carry on in the PC. And the idea of carrying on in a handheld, I'm already doing it on my phone. I played Persona 3 on my phone. I played it via Cloud Play, Remote Play, PC, Series X, Series S. So I played it all over the place. And that synergy is great. And I think that will draw people away from the Switch. And it won't be dramatic. It won't be a sales failure, but I don't think it will sell as well. Now, where I was going with this is obviously that's why Microsoft and, to a lesser extent, Sony are doing the same thing. But Xbox One sold what, 50 million consoles?
Right about that, eh? Yep.
Xbox Series X and S have sold 50 million. 30 million, I think, was the latest estimate. Putting aside, how much money Microsoft have in general, Sega would have killed for those numbers. The situations from a sales platform perspective are not remotely similar. I know that I was just saying that I think that the console market is shrinking, but by the same token, these consoles are still selling reasonably well. They are not in a Sega position. Microsoft are doing it. They're reacting and seeing growth opportunities. Sega were effectively fighting for their life, so the scenarios just aren't comparable in the least.
Aye, and if you look at how much the new Xboxes cost, the bulk of Xbox sales, I would still imagine the majority lean towards Series X. I still think the S is a great machine. I mean, I've had one before, I've had an X as well. They're great consoles, but and even if you look at the PlayStation 5, like 5, 6, if you go for a Pro, $700, 700, was it £650? That's like three Dreamcasts and a couple of games, So, either they're still making plenty of money from it, but the difference is that, to go back to the kind of crux of the topic of the pod, is that, Xbox have the financial muscle as a company to absorb any kind of decline in sales. They've got the resources there to do that. They can sit there and go, oh, we've only, was that is it Xbox Pure put out something saying January hardware sales worse since 2020 in the US, Xbox sales declined by 50%. So that's happened in January, just last week or this week. Phil Spencer's on, a podcast saying we're committed to hardware. If Sega had been like that position, we need to get out, we need to survive. It's like, that's why, to go back to the topic, it is disingenuous to say that Xbox are the new Sega because their fortunes are wildly different. Just simply sitting there going, they've went third party or they've went third party. And again, Xbox have doubled down. They're not getting out of hardware. You've just mentioned this Xbox handheld, which again, they probably feel a bit of a threat from Steam Deck. The
Yes,
success
that's what
they've.
it is.
That, and again, that's it would hark back to that whole thing about with PS2. They felt threatened. They're reacting to a threat in a market where they dominate, which is where their name was made, which is PC. Whereas Sega, downturn in sales, they had that initial boom in the West, and as much as people don't talk about the European Dreamcast launch and focus on 9999, there's a video I did on the European launch did show there was a great response, especially in the kind of the key primary markets in Europe. So Dreamcast's kind of European launch and American launches were phenomenal. But after that, it fizzled out. that everybody who wanted a Dreamcast in the West in that opening 4 to 6 weeks got their Dreamcast. There was nothing after that, and that's when the panic set in. The attach rate for games was dropping. People blame piracy, but did everybody really have, CD and DVD? Well, CD burners, but who do you know had a DVD burner in 2000 in their PC? Sure, market, your markets, out-of-town markets and stalls and your usual kind of Barra's style, outlets that sell pirate games probably had their means, but you're only going out to your pals to burn Dreamcast games, like you were with Amiga, going with a pack of 10 TDKs and a your ex copy and flicking through your mates' games and copying them. I think the piracy thing for Dreamcast is overplayed. I don't think it had anywhere near as big a role as piracy killed the Dreamcast. No, unfortunately, Sega's past killed Dreamcast. But aye, Sega couldn't absorb the drop in console sales from the initial launch period when it looked so promising. You and I would have been sitting there going, "Oh, we're back, here we go." And then it just fizzled out really, really quickly. And Sega couldn't absorb that. And that's why they had to make the drastic decision to shut up shop, only less than 3 years on the market globally for Dreamcast, and shut up shop and just go third party to survive. Xbox, as we just said, 50% decline, worst sales since 2020. Now we're still committed to hardware. Yeah. Xbox is the new Sega.
No, I've got an
Very
even
good.
better one, mate. I mean, you think of the
Let's
fact.
hear it.
I mean, let's rewind to the demise of the Dreamcast. As you said, mate, Sega had to go third party to survive. They couldn't support the Dreamcast anymore. A lot of people don't realize how dire things were for Sega. They were on the verge of bankruptcy. They were very much near, SNK levels of kind of non-existence, ceasing to exist. And it's only because Okawa himself, who was actually against the idea of the Dreamcast and always wanted the Sega to go third party, but he gave them that roll of the dice, let them go put everything they had into the Dreamcast. And it's only because he forgave those debts on his deathbed that Sega are still around today. It's only because of what he did that Sega are still around. But Sega were They nearly ceased to exist. They would have existed, but in name only, hoovered up by some, forget Xbox is the new Sega. Sega could have been the new Atari. In it was that dire. And obviously he forgave his loans. It allowed Sega to carry on. Side point about all of that, and another difference is you don't hear everyone in Xbox and Microsoft Game Studios or whatever saying how they're upset about making games for PlayStation or Switch or PC. Everyone's always like, oh yeah, we're really excited to learn this new technology. At Sega, you had people threatening to resign. Yuji Naka famously threatened to resign if Sega gave up on the Dreamcast. You had developers threatening to quit because they didn't want to make games for other consoles. And Sega eventually talked a number of them around. A number of them did leave in the end. But that's the difference in the mindset between the two. But going back to what I was going to say, you're saying if Sega experienced that 50% drop, to effect, they did experience that drop in console sales, and then that caused them to fall into financial oblivion. But for Sony and Microsoft first, they had the whole Xbox 360 Red Ring of Death palaver, and that cost them what, a few billion? In recalling consoles,
Aye.
that would have ended Sega. The PlayStation 3, Mecha Fatnik, friend of the channel, and on his site, he's called that the Sony Saturn, because it has a lot of similarities in kind of how it was designed and how a lot of it was reactionary and how they had to revise it so much. And apparently, the amount of issues that it caused them to have to swallow like $750 million or something like that as well. So they say Sega would have survived neither of those two scenarios, and that just shows the difference between the companies, I think, because say Sega were just doing this to survive. So it's Microsoft's and Xbox and Sony and PlayStation, you know, they're two arms of much bigger, far richer companies. You know, Sony is a multi-billion dollar company, hundreds of billions of worth. Xbox is a multi-trillion dollar company. Xbox for what? Maybe a billion at the maybe 3 billion at the, at their peak. So it's not even directly comparable. I think if you're going to say Xbox is the new anything, they're the new CDI. They're the new Philips CDI. You know, Philips saw an opportunity. Obviously, they were like Sony, spurned by Nintendo in making a CD add-on, tried to make a number of their own games. That failed. They made to put out their own console or system. CDI is a very weird thing. When that failed, they very, very briefly had their own publishing brand, and then went out of existence. Similar with the 3DO, you know, created a new console. When that didn't go so well, you know, they went third party effectively. That's nothing like Sega, because Sega went third party for, you know, because they were flirting with Oblivion, unlike Xbox, which could carry on making consoles forever as things stand. It's only because they want more money rather than they need any money. The other thing is that Sega were third party before they even made the Mega Drive. You know, you had me and you, mate, we played games on Spectrum, Commodore 64, Amiga. You know, I've got PC games. I've got games for me on the PC Engine behind me. You know, a console that was competing with the Master System and Mega Drive. You can get Afterburner on the NES. You can get Shinobi on the Nintendo or on the Famicom. And that's the difference, because if there is any similarity, it's that, like Sega did when they had a success with the Mega Drive, they basically said, "Right, none of you are getting any of this anymore. It's all ours now. We're keeping it all here." And Xbox, as for all the doom and gloom and all the, you know, if the next Xbox hardware is successful, Microsoft will just say, "Yeah, this is all exclusive now. Call of Duty included. Nothing's stopping them."
See, when we were talking there, what came to mind, mate, was the Archipel documentary. I think it's two or three parts, and it's titled "The A Dream Cast." Right, it's obviously about the Dreamcast, and it's got kind of interviews with, like, you know, various people through Sega's history, developers. And Mizuguchi's on there, Yu Suzuki, I think he's referenced, I don't think he's actually on it, but there's loads of different kind of faces from Sega's past from that era on there. And the one thing that always strikes me about that interview, and all the interviews on that and that video, is still the sense of almost shame and sadness that these people feel because of what happened to Dreamcast, right? And that's, I think, where the difference is. Not so much with Sony, but I think for Microsoft, the Xbox is just a product. That's all it is. It's just a brand. Sega's consoles were its identity. It was part of its identity. And the failure of it, of the Dreamcast and the Saturn, you know, but this video is specific, this documentary specifically about Dreamcast, and you can really sense in the way they're talking, their body language, the tone of their voices, that there's a real sense of shame. Not shame as in ashamed of themselves, but shame in that system was let down by previous decisions, by the gaming public, by the gaming media, that it was allowed to fail, that it was allowed to basically, even though it was Sega's last roll of the dice, as you said, Okawa didn't really want to green light it, but he gave Sega about that one last go, one last hurrah to try and make it work, and it didn't. But that's the thing that I feel watching that, is that these products, they were part of Sega's identity. They had a link, you know, to various individuals and within the company. There was a creative bond between these machines and these people, whereas Xbox is just a product, very corporate. Go up on the stage, have a keynote. It's very, very Apple, old school Apple. You know, today we're announcing iPhone 72. You know, it's like, go up on stage, demo reel, show a product, you know, there it is, it'll be out here, then whatever. They're just, I think at least with PlayStation, well, yes, they also got in, you know, was it Phil Harrison? Is it Phil Harrison? Is it? The guy at Sony UK, you know, there's footage of him in his youth, you know, going on about, you know, Sony wanting some of that gaming pie and stuff like that, you know. So also they got in for that reason. But Ken Kutaragi, still at his core, he was friends with Hideki Sato. They were buddies. So, you know, the PlayStation is every bit as much of an identity of Sony as the Walkman. You know, it's up there with that. So it's still a tie to the company, to that kind of bit of creativity around them. Whereas I still think with Microsoft, the Xbox is just, it's a Windows, it's a product, you know. So I think it's a bit more clinical. But if you, anybody who's watching this, if you haven't watched the it's called, I think they've renamed it actually. I just brought it up on YouTube. The title is The Dreamcast Remembered by 8 Game Creators, right? And again, if you've not watched it, it's absolutely phenomenal. And you'll probably get the same kind of takeaway from it that I did, of just there's pride in the Dreamcast, pride in Sega, pride in their work, but tinged with that kind of sadness and regret that it didn't do as well as it deserved to.
Yeah, no, absolutely, mate. I think that's spot on because yeah, it was, and you're right. It was Sega's identity. You know, Sega were 100% a games company. It's not true now. Sega Sammy are like 10% casinos and 1% hotels, and where I think you look across the board. You know, Microsoft is what at most 20% Xbox. You know, Sony is, and probably more because of how kind of they've lost ground in the electronics industry. Because, you know, back in the 90s, Sony was the brand, wasn't it? Sony tellys, Walkmans, Discmans. You know, they're not the force that they were now, you know, that they were then. Now, you know, Sony tellys aren't as ubiquitous as they used to be, you know. You know, you go to your LGs and Samsungs and everything these days.
Oh mate, if you walked out of your mate's house and seen a Sony, or somebody seen you buying a Sony, that would, ooh, you had the best of gear, you had a Sony, you know. So
So I think Sony, PlayStation at one point was probably like 20% of Sony, you know, in the PS2 era. It's probably more like you say, it's probably more like 40, 50% Sony now. I think there was something way back when the PS4 was basically carrying the company. But you know, that's still half less than half of the company. Nintendo are 100% games. Sega were 100% games. These were companies that put absolutely everything into their games and their game hardware. You can't compare that to a company that, you know, moved into the industry as a growth opportunity, you know, for all of Ken's passion. You know, he was passionate about the Nintendo, and he managed to get the make the sound chip for the SNES, and he pushed and pushed because he had children that were passionate, and he was passionate about games. But he obviously had to sell that to the shareholders, to the brass at the top, you know, and they bought into it. They invested because of the growth opportunity. So it's not really, that's not comparable. When you talk about games, mate, if the Series X was Microsoft's last console, no one is going to remember it for the games. No one. Dreamcast is so fondly remembered. You look at that launch lineup, absolute fire. There are more exclusive games in that launch lineup than there has been for the entirety of the Xbox and PS5 generation. You know, throughout its life, and you're getting games like Skies of Arcadia, the Shenmue games, the Sonic Adventure games, Jet Set Radio, games that are just, you know, revered today, that push boundaries. And you don't get any of that on either of these two new systems. So, no, it's not. The new series consoles aren't the new Dreamcast. They're not even remotely close. They couldn't
no.
lace its boots. You know, the content's not there. The passion just isn't there, as you say, mate. Very clinical. You know, the desperation isn't there. You know, these people aren't desperate for the these consoles to survive. They just want to make as much money as possible. This isn't life and death for them. This isn't passion. This is corporate, let's put out a product, let's get X people to buy product. How much rate of return can we get? For what, 2 years, we didn't even have like a decent Xbox Series exclusive, did we? It took Halo was delayed by a year. No, compare that to the Dreamcast, which launched with Sonic Adventure. It had its best game there day one, and then followed that up with banger after banger after banger. And that's a conversation for another time, mate. Do AAA games, do great exclusive sell console. Sadly for the Dreamcast, unfortunately not, because if that was true, we'd still have Sega consoles today. But there we go. But yeah, that's as far as I'm concerned, mate. The two companies couldn't be any different in terms of how they entered the industry, how they worked through the industry, the innovations they made, and what they brought gamers, what they brought towards the games themselves, and all the way up to their latest consoles. Their situations, the libraries they furnished them with, the approach and the ethos behind those consoles, they couldn't be any different. So no, for me, Xbox isn't the new Sega. Xbox is the Philips CD-i. Xbox is the 3DO. You don't get, I know Sega, I know it's scary that Microsoft have been in the gaming, making consoles longer than Sega ever did now. It doesn't feel like it, but then maybe it doesn't feel like it because they haven't really done that much of note. And haven't left a footprint as big as Sega did. I don't know. That's just my view, mate.
No, I think the you were talking about like the Series X, and I think the Dreamcast still, despite being long gone, still has a better game library than the Xbox Series X. Like, there's still more games that I think are better to be, are waiting to be experienced, a better library, a richer, more fun, more enjoyable game library than what's on Xbox Series X. I think I would wager if you were to give gamers of a certain age a Series X and a Dreamcast with, a bulk of games, the exclusives, you'd have more fun on a Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And I don't think Xbox. And again, I'm not trying to shit on it. I absolutely love Xbox. I've had every Xbox so far, had great fun with them, but I don't think they will be remembered anywhere near with as much fondness as what Sega is. If the Xbox Series X was Xbox's last console, right? In 25 years' time, there's not going to be the Xbox guys. There's not going to be Radio Xbox. There's not going to be Xbox Retro or any of these. There's not going to be any of these, clamorings for nostalgia of the past.
Xbox
Aye, it's just not going to happen. And people might go, "I talk shite," but sorry, I would wholeheartedly, till I'm blue in the face, disagree with that. I would argue that back because they don't have the legacy there to draw back to. They are a corporate conglomerate who got into the gaming industry to make money, and they hoovered up, IP and companies to give themselves a portfolio because they didn't have the talent internally to make the games themselves, and that's why they're not the new Sega. They've never been any version of Sega, old or new, and they never will be. So that's the whole point, is that, Sega live on through the people who lived and loved it, whenever it was at its peak, because of the fun, because of the innovation, because of the passion. That's why we do this, because these games and these consoles and these arcade machines, they have made such an impact on an emotional level at a key time in our lives, an influential time in our lives, that they've stuck. And to a point, there's part of Xbox which is in there, the OG and the 360, certainly. Playing Gears of War online every Monday night with my mates on, eight player Gears of War, 4-on-4 on canals, first to get the sniper rifle, usually one, on that bridge. Phenomenal fun. So there is memories tied there. But in terms of Xbox's legacy and being compared to Sega, nah, there's just, as I say, 25 years' time, whenever I'm drawing my pension, if I look back and I'm wrong, I'll stick my false teeth in and, yeah, yous were right. But nah, I just, I still have my teeth, my pensioner, mate. My teeth are fucking golden. But I just don't see there being anywhere near the retro enthusiasm towards recent modern Xbox that there has been towards Sega.
Yeah, perfectly said, mate. And I completely agree. Even though I own a Series X, a Series S as well, but I love my Xbox console. I love Game Pass. It's allowed me to play a lot of modern games, and there are modern games that I do enjoy and stuck a lot of time into. Persona 3 Remake, I suppose, is an old game, but by the by, I do enjoy it. But you're right, mate. These, they even. Even the and we both said that we see the spiritual connection between Xbox and the original Xbox and the Dreamcast, but even that was not of Xbox's doing. It's half of it because Sega gave them games, half of it because Sega were trying to make it a compatible with the Dreamcast, and the rest of it is only like the Dreamcast because you know that nit meme of Mr. Bean doing the test and he's looking over copying someone else's notes. That's them copying what Sega are doing. Unfortunately, they don't have as much of the legacy and the identity. And I've got a PlayStation 5, mate, and I've considered selling that several times already. I've only got a handful of games for it, and that has been even more disappointing to me than the Xbox Series console. I did absolutely adore the Astro games. But the thing that jumps out at me, mate, is, we talk about Xbox and celebrating its legacy. Astro's Playroom, not Astro's Playroom, Astro Bot, the full release game that I got for Christmas, that does celebrate Sony's legacy. But the thing that really irks me about that game, and it shouldn't do, it really shouldn't do. It should be like, yeah, let's celebrate gaming, man. It's a celebration of all things gaming. But it's like you go through this Astro game and you rescue characters, and you get like the Ape Escape characters. Oh, that's a really cool callback to a classic PlayStation franchise. And who else do you rescue? Ryu and Ken from Street Fighter, Jill Valentine from Resident Evil, Ooh La La from Space Channel 5. You got the wireframe guy from Res, and you're like, that's not your identity, though, is it? You don't see Sega or Nintendo having to pilfer from all different areas. I know Smash Brothers does, but that's kind of up because Smash Brothers has just become this whole different thing. But Nintendo don't celebrate other people's franchises because they don't have a history. Sega don't celebrate other people's franchises because they don't have a history. PlayStation does, and Microsoft are in the same position, and that's what differentiates Sega and Nintendo from those two companies. And that's why what you said just then is so spot on. Microsoft and Xbox have never, ever been any version of Sega, ever. That's it.
That's it, mate. That's exactly it. That's a brilliant point that you made there. That Sony were having to draw characters from other games, other creators that aren't their own making. As you think about, if that was either Sega or Nintendo doing that, my God, that you'd be rescuing. You need a DLC pack to rescue the characters, mate. There's that many, unbelievable. We spoke about slight tangent. We spoke about the Fighters Mega Mix too. Like, how many Sega characters could be in that? It'd be terrifying. And again, it always down to that decades and decades worth of creativity, passion, innovation, just the thought getting into these characters, these franchises, these games, that they don't need anybody else. They can do it all themselves, as they always have done.
And that's it. That's why they are gaming companies through and through. Sega, and again, as Nintendo as well, but Sega are a gaming company through and through. And as much as I've enjoyed PlayStations, as much as I've enjoyed Xboxes, you can't buy that history, you can't buy that identity, and you can't buy that connection.
Maybe we could say they're the Man City of gaming.
Oh, there they are. Yes.
They're buying their history.
Yeah.
That's that. Man City fans will just be anyone listening there.
MK Dons, mate. MK
Well,
Dons when they bought Wimbledon and took all the trophies to the MK Dons stadium. And I live in Milton
that.
Keynes and support the local team, but Jesus, come on.
Oh man, there we go. We somehow managed to get a football analogy in there before we finish up. There we go.
There we go. But that's no, I think it's been good to talk about this one, mate, and get it off our chest, I think, because it really has irked me. People saying that Xbox are the new Sega when, as we've established, it's not even close. And as you know, so appropriately coined, they've never been any version of Sega, ever.
No.
Neither of
Perfect, mate.
Sony. It annoys me that Sony are the blue gaming company now. The blue.
I know.
That's Sega. Sega are the blue gaming company. They're the blue brand. It's like they broke into Sega's house, kicked them out, and put on their clothes.
Squatters' rights. It's like, oh, you don't need those blue cases anymore. I will start using them. There you go.
Oh, but yeah, it's been great. It's been great talking this one through, mate, because as I say, those comments have all irked me. But yeah, would love to hear what our viewers and listeners think on this topic. Are Xbox's new Sega? If you think they are, then leave. No, honestly. No, we'd love to hear, any views from anyone. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we got the wrong end of the stick. We are just a pair of grumpy old Sega bastards here. So get in touch via the comments below, via the live chat if you're watching this live, via the Radio Sega Discord, via the Sega Guys Discord. And if you want to be extra mega, think about becoming a member from as little as 99p. And you can have various perks, including all our Akira All Access members getting their names read out right now.
Certainly, our Akira All Access members for today's show are G-Man, Stiff Peaks, Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Sega Saturn, Shiro, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter 007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Greg Matthews, David Owens, Tom Thumb. I love this name. Kaiju Leviathan. Wow, what a username that is. That is absolutely sensational. Craig Sayer and our newcomer who joined during the Shenmue premiere is Nelson Cirino. So thank you very much to all our members and subscribers for your continued support. We're almost at 11,000 subscribers now. The channel is flying and it's all down to you guys supporting us and what we do. So thank you so much.
Yeah, just to echo that, just everything that all of you do, viewing, watching, subscribing, sharing, just being here with us now just means the absolute world to us. Just listen to us talk about Sega and sharing our passion for this company that we hold so dearly. It's great that so many of you share that passion, and I hope you enjoy being on this journey with us, because there's a lot more to come. So thank you so much. Hitting 10,000 subscribers was unlike anything else, and seeing us rocket towards 11,000, absolutely unreal. So truly, once again, humbled and so appreciative of everything that you guys do. So James and I will always be here talking Sega. So until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!